You're live.
Out that way.
Good evening. The Young Israel of Hillcrest was an integral part of David's life, and the Young Israel of Hillcrest benefited profoundly over the years from David. On behalf of the Young Israel of Hillcrest, I'd like to welcome family and friends here for this third Yahrzeit commemoration for David, for David Chaim ben Tzvi Akiva, and at this time ask Stacy to come up.
Birshut our Mora to ask for Rabbi Weiss, Rabbanim, dear family and friends. Thank you all for coming tonight. It means a lot to us that you have taken time from your busy schedules, Erev Pesach, to help commemorate David's Yahrzeit. Many of you here tonight knew David, including our keynote speaker, whose parents live in Hillcrest, and whose younger brother was David's counselor one summer in Camp Marasha. But I wanted to take a minute to talk about what made David so special. When I thought back on this, my predominant thought was not anything that happened over the 20 years that I was able to physically mother him, but on what happened on the days right before he died and what has continued to happen ever since. I know David is special because of the wonderful friends he has. Yes, I know I said has in the present tense, not had in the past tense. For I have learned in the last 3 years that friendship can be eternal. Look around this room tonight and you will see the finest young men, and I am proud to say that my son was and is part of this chevra. These are the young men who pounded at Shaarei Shamayim 3 years ago to beg Hashem through tefillah, tehillim, learning and mitzvot for refuah for David. When Hashem saw fit to take David's life, these are the young men that made sure that David's neshama would continuously rise higher and higher in Shemayim. They collected money and donated a Sefer Torah in David's name that resides in the shul and that is used on a regular basis. They wrote and edited Divrei Torah on the Parshiot Emoadim and published a Sefer, the Tzemach David, which is continuously used and which there are still copies that are available if anybody's interested. They raised money for a scholarship in David's name at Yeshivat Shalavim. They've arranged for shiurim le'ilu nishmato, including the event tonight, and they are hard at work at a new project. They have made me and Svi and our family part of their families, including us in their smachot, calling us before Shabbos and Yom Tov, delivering shalach manot, introducing us to their wives and children, and making sure that we know that David remains in their hearts. So you see, I know my son was special because my son was and is one of these boys. And in Azkara at Yeshivat Shalavim, soon after David died, Rav Yamer, David's Shana Aleph Rebbe, spoke of David's aspirations to be a successful professional who was Marbitz Torah. With that in mind, and without further ado, I want to call upon our speaker, Charlie Harari, a successful attorney who is Marbitz Torah, who has inspired many of us with his valuable insights and has graciously agreed to speak to us, to address us this evening.
Shister Rav, David's parents. I am clearly unworthy to be standing here today, having known David, my brother, was his counselor, being a child of this neighborhood, Baruch Hashem. I came here later on in life, but when anyone here who grew up in Hillcrest, you understand, doesn't matter when you come, you're part of the family the minute you walk in. And so although I came after high school, I feel I've been here my entire life. And I pray that Hashem gives me the right words to say. Past few days, I've been living, literally, on the blogs that was someone made a journal when David was sick, and then after his patira, his friends would write in, and I was telling your husband that when I read it for the first time, I thought I was reading about like a Rav. I thought I was reading about, they were writing things, not like I'm missing my friend. They were writing things like things that you hear about someone who's been involved in chinuch and being marbitzot for years. And so the testament of David's friends is the testament of David, because that's how it works. It's a relationship. And so to all his friends and to everyone in the tzibur, we should be zocha to have an iloy neshama, and we should be zocha together as a community and as a kihila and as klal yisrael to only know simchas from now on at mea v'yashim shana and at b'yashkol tzedek. We're about to enter into the Yontif of Pesach. And the bridge between Pesach and Purim is the story of Amalek. Amalek literally leads us off. We open with Zachor, and we go into Purim, and we know that the thing that holds us on from when we leave Purim, and the only thing that messed things up when we left Mitzrayim, was the story, this concept of Amalek. And we said, I don't know if we said it in shul here before, but Amalek's an amazing concept, because Amalek is the only real mitzvah that we have that I think makes very, very little sense. We know this. Parsha Zachor. We have this rule that we have to erase the memory of Amalek. Okay, so what do we do? So we have this obligation. Midoraisa. Only time all year men have to come to shul. Only time midoraisa is Parsha Zachor. You can stay home, Midoraisa. And we come in, everyone quiet down. Shh, no, really, guys, seriously, stop talking, ladies. There's an extra reading and two readings and four readings. Everyone, please, this time, really be quiet. We're going to read Amalek. And we say, Zachor is the Shara Salach Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. Why? Because you have to forget Amalek. Anyone see the problem here? We're sitting around remembering Amalek to forget Amalek. Guess what? Everyone has forgotten Amalek. We're the only people that actually remembers them. We don't even know who they are, because they're gone. The Nazis were Amalek, the Arabs are Amalek, the guy that failed me on my road test is Amalek. Everyone in the world that doesn't like me is Amalek, because we don't know who they are. And guess what? Nobody remembers Amalek. Go on the street with a survey, everyone's like, what are you talking about? The only guys who remember Amalek are us. You know why? Because we come in to remember Amalek in order to forget Amalek. What's the problem here? I have an idea. It's called the Harari plan. Let's stop with this whole Zachor business. We'll go put it right back into the place where everyone's sleeping in the end of the Torah almost by Maftir. And then in a few years, we will actually forget Amalek. So what is going on? So I remember years ago, unfortunately we have this problem again, years ago when we had the Iranians had first built the nuclear facility. If you remember, the Americans had put in what was called the Stuxnet virus. And I can picture in my mind the Iranians waiting for the Air Force, the airplanes to come in like in 1981 when they bombed the Iraqi plant, and they had all these ground-to-air missiles. And they're waiting for the Israelis to come with the jets. And meanwhile, the Israelis had put the virus in the back. You know what I'm talking about? And I'm picturing like two Israelis like in some like, you know, place in some desert somewhere, like in, like drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes, talking like a million miles a minute, like, you know, Yoni, like, you know, on a computer, shutting down the entire facility as the Iranians are outside, like, you know, al-jihad, al-jihad. And they're sitting there waiting, but guess what? The Israelis are smart enough. They change their face and they just put the virus in the back door. Who is Amalek? Amalek, the people, when we came out of Mitzrayim, we're the people that show the world that God exists. That there's no coincidences, that Kadosh Baruch Hu walked in out of nowhere. He didn't just create a world and booked out. He came down and he saw these people. We are the people that walked out of the world. And everyone goes, wait, maybe there is a God. Maybe there is a coincidence. And I'm malik with the people that said, what, are you kidding me? There's no God. Stop. It's a suffix. It's a coincidence. They attacked us then for one reason. They stood for the concept of, it's just a coincidence. It's just because. Stop making a big deal of it. It's because. And they came to fight us back then, and they were a people. And we beat them. And we think they're gone. And every single year, God goes, go back in the room, because remember, Zachar, remember, if you're not hitting Mashiach, they're not gone. They just changed their face. They used to be a people. They're not a people anymore. Now they're a virus. Now you can have big yeshivas and big people, but in the inside of our cores and our hearts and our souls, Amalek is sitting going, please stop. It's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. It's a coincidence. And nothing applies, I don't think, as much as when we hit a holiday. Because when we look at the American world, and God bless this country, and I love these people, I love this country, but when you look around in the Western world, we all have holidays. My favorite growing up was Thanksgiving, because you get to be an American. You know, turkey, the cranberry sauce, you played football, you called your mom and dad. It was awesome. 2 days off. And if someone says, why aren't you keeping Thanksgiving? Well, I don't know, a long, long time ago, you know, pilgrims and got together, they ate, they said thank you. We're Jews, we like to eat. We're supposed to say thank you. So I don't know how really relevant to me back then. But they did it, it's some kind of custom, so we'll do it again. And the purpose of holidays is really to spend time with family, and that feels good. We take a break from work, spend time with family, and that's why we have holidays. And why do we have Pesach for? Because a long, long, long time ago, they left Egypt, they did some stuff, they didn't have time to break bread, so they had matzah. I don't know, it's not really relevant to today. Stop it. It was a long time ago. And it's a custom that we do, but you know, we take off time from the family, from work, and we spend time with family, and that's the purpose of the holiday. It's a nice time to spend time with family. We'll do whatever customs we have to do. But that's all it is. And for most of us, we'll go through an entire Pesach and think this. The customs aren't relevant to today. It's a commemoration of a long time ago. The reason why we have holidays is to stop from work and spend time with family. And while family is extremely important, that's not why we have holidays. That's a malek inside us going, no, it's not important, it's not relevant, it's just because they did it. And we'll go through a Pesach after Pesach after Pesach after Pesach, eating bad bread, having crackers, wishing that it was almost over, we can have real pizza again. And by the way, pizza's good, especially one from Shimon's. And we can go an entire holiday, our entire life, Jews can go an entire lifetime thinking that the holidays that we have are just commemorative. The things that we do have no relevance to today. And every time we as a nation walk into a holiday and do stuff and think that the stuff I'm doing is not affecting my life today, Amalek is sitting around the back on the computer smoking cigarettes, drinking a lot of wine, and going, we got another one. Another great, look how great this family is. And they walk through a holiday just like they walked in. That's not how it works by us. The way it works is that God created a world, and in the world he put in an energy called spirituality. It funnels, it builds, it controls our world. The physical world in which we live right now is just based on the energy of the spiritual world. And from the beginning of time, the spiritual world, there are certain parts of the world that had specific energy. My son was asking me the other day about voltage. He was learning in school about voltage. He said, Daddy, what's voltage? Here's what it is. There's an outlet in the wall. And you can plug in that outlet and stuff can work. You can plug in your chargers. Today you don't have anything you plug into, you just plug in chargers. You plug in your charger in the wall, your DS can light up. But if we went to Yankee Stadium and we brought home the lights, you plug it into the wall, it wouldn't work. Do you know why? There isn't enough voltage. So you have to understand that although there's electricity, there's certain times where there's a lot of voltage. You go to Yankee Stadium, there's more voltage, there's more energy in the outlet. And God created a world, and what he did was he put in the day certain amounts of energy. Spirituality, it's real. And mornings and nights, Shabbos and weekdays. And then certain parts of the year, there's a specific amount of energy. Of spirituality for something specific. And then an event in history happens. And God goes, stop, that's it. That is the window to the energy that's been in there from the beginning of time. This isn't just a one-time event. It's not that they did it a long time ago. This is actually going on every year, but this exactly thing that would happen, this custom, this thing, is a window into what's really going on behind the scenes. This is how you can go behind the curtain and tap into an energy, a spirituality that's there right now for you today. Pesach is not about them leaving Egypt It's great they left. It worked out wonderful for us. Happy we're not in Egypt right now. Although the weather can be a little hotter. Pesach goes on every single year. It is the exact same spirituality. And the question that we have to have is, how do I tap into it? What is it that it shows us that I today in 2012 can observe Pesach and do what they did but become a different person? I want to plug myself into an outlet and I want to get that same spirituality. Rav Dessler says in Michtam Eliyahu, Jewish festivals are not merely anniversaries of important historical events designed to remind us of these occurrences. Rather, they are annual spiritual opportunities. We do not simply commemorate events, we relive them. We do so by tapping into the unique spiritual energy that is unleashed during this respective time period. The Netziv Shalom says, L'chol chag mishles haragolam yesh lo skula so miyuched, that there's a special skula, ha-me'ir l'chol yehudi l'chol hashana, that is enlightened, that shows the Jew throughout the year, v'hi itzuma shel chag. The concept of holidays for us is that there's something going on, there's a spiritual opportunity, and if we go through it, eat a couple extra things, and go, oh my God, I'm getting so fat, this is great, I have to go davening again, I gotta go down long, this is great, can I eat another meal? It doesn't work. Unless we're tapping into that energy, we're missing the yantiv. And the energy that we're coming up to is the first. We're entering into Pesach. This is number one for us. This is freedom. All of us are trying to leave Egypt. Mitzrayim is not just a place. Mitzrayim comes from the word Metzar, which means constriction, which means limitation, boundary. And if you're all of us today have our own boundaries and limitations that are stopping us from becoming the people we want to be. We all want to be the fathers and mothers we want to be. We all want to be husbands and wives and brothers and sisters and employees and Jews. All of us know that my life where it is right now is good, but it could become better. There's something that's blocking me. There's something that's holding me back. Each of us, if we're around today, knows that we all walk around in some way in our own personal Metzar in our Mitzrayim. We want to be more. We want to do more. We don't know how to break out. And Pesach every year comes to say, let me show you. The goal of Pesach is to teach us the lessons of freedom so that we can become free ourselves. How? So what I'd like to talk about today is three steps, three ideas, the roadmap. The roadmap to how through the story of Pesach, through the customs of Pesach, we are able to break out of our own slavery and have our own real freedom. So let's begin. Arguably the most popular custom in the entire Jewish history, our Jewish culture, is that of the Seder. Jews from all over keep the Seder. Everywhere you are, you're going to see Jews getting together on the Seder, and it's awesome. You sit around the table, and you have matzah and maror, and you sit around, and what is the whole purpose of the Seder? Is to commemorate leaving Egypt. Right? Freedom and the apokosos and the I can't believe that mom thought about anything but food for the first time ever in Jewish mother history, and she forgot to bake the bread early, so now we're stuck eating matzah for the rest of our lives. And all these things sitting around, and finally it's an entire experience to relive the freedom of Egypt. And we remember, it's the only thing that we have in our culture, by the way, that is unbroken from the beginning of time. We never had a break in Seder. But there's only one problem. When was the first Seder? I would think the first Seder is when? The year they left Egypt, no? The anniversary to the wedding is the year after the wedding. You sit down, the pictures, the video, oh my gosh, I can't believe it, how did I get so fat, the whole thing. The year after you win the Stanley Cup, you get together, you kiss the cup, I can't believe it, I got the right call, who could have thought? You celebrate the anniversary of something the first year after that thing happens, no? When was the first Seder? The first Seder was the night before they left. The Jews are literally in Egypt and they're sitting around with the matzah that their moms didn't cook the next day, drinking, eating, acting like free men. What were they doing, a dress rehearsal? Like they're just getting them ready? Why would God have them be following the Seder before they actually leave Egypt? How do you have the anniversary before you get married? So he was teaching them arguably maybe the most important concept of personal growth. And that is the power of visualization. There's a famous psychologist named Robert Rosenthal. He was a Harvard psychologist. He did a study in 1962 and 1991. He was studying what's called the Pygmalion effect. Maybe some of you in psychology understand this. It's an amazing concept. I can't quote this, I couldn't believe it. Basically what he did was he walked into a classroom called the Oak Tree School. He pulled out five kids randomly. Then he put the five kids back in there and went to the teacher and said, by the way, these five kids have unique intellectual abilities. That's it. Then he left. No special programs, no after-school activities, no ribbons, no pins, nothing for the poster, the thing, the bumper sticker in the back of the car. He comes back at the end of the year, looks at the scores of the kids, and he sees top English scores, those five kids. Okay, English, maybe she's thinking, it's subjective. Math scores, objective. Those five kids, top math scores. Then he gives the kids an IQ test. And he comes back, and these five kids, after 1 year of just the teacher thinking they were smarter, scored 12 points higher on their IQ test. And he realized this concept called the Pygmalion effect, or the expectancy theory, which was when someone expects something of you, you become more. We all live in a world where we think we are limited. We live in a world sometimes where we go through our lives and we are who we are who we are. And our brains are very good at seeing just how little we can do, because we get stuck in the details of life sometimes. You ever see two guys sitting, this is the best, you ever see a guy sitting in front of a TV and watch a game, especially now, March time, all the time. You sit down in front of a TV, you pick a team, you never know what teams are. You're just finding two college teams you like. After 5 minutes, you decide what you like. 10 minutes later, you're screaming at the TV. You didn't know who they were 5 minutes ago. You're screaming, I can't believe we busted that call, oh my gosh. You're like, what's the problem? Like, you know, instead we lost the game. You're like, you didn't even know who the teams were. You ever watch a movie and you see them going halfway through the movie? Halfway through, you're crying. And you're like, I can't believe Brad Pitt's going to die. And you're like, he's going to live. He's in the Oscars. You're like, I know, but he's about to die. You're like, no. He's actually alive. But for some reason, as soon as we get into something, our minds have this ability to keep us stuck in the trees of life. That's why people cannot talk for 10 years for something small that happened. One time, and again, shishi, or you didn't say hello to me the right time. 10 years later, this fight's still going on. How is that possible? Because in our lives, the first inclination that we have in our own life is getting stuck in the limitations of where we are. We get stuck in the games. We get stuck in the stories. We can't break out of it. And God turns around and says, you're missing it. If you would see who you really were, if someone would look at you and tell you who you really could be, you would rise to become the people you're supposed to be. The purpose of the Seder in the first night was one thing. God says, if you want to be free, you think I'm going to walk you out of a country and you're going to be free? You think by changing your environment, by changing your geography, you're going to be free? That's not how you're going to be free. Freedom was never how you dress. Freedom is never where you live. Freedom starts in one thing, here. It starts when you decide you're going to be free. When you decide you're free, then you're free. When you can see what freedom is supposed to be like, when you can see what it means to be free, it doesn't matter where you're physically standing. When you can visualize it, when you can taste it, when you can talk it, you can be in the middle of Egypt, but that's when you really are free. Daniel Goleman is a famous psychologist. He writes this amazing concept that connecting with one's dreams releases one's passion, energy, and excitement about life. The key is uncovering your ideal self, the person you would like to be, including what you want your life to be. Developing that ideal image requires reaching in deep inside one's gut. You know it when you touched it. And the Piazetzner Rebbe said, each year, his whole idea of growth was each year, clarify a goal and visualize the actualized you. Visualize who this you will be. Your accomplishments, your daily life, your character, and once you visualize this you, now you will have a gauge in which to grow. The first step for freedom, God says, is not to worry about doing anything. The first step in freedom is to actually see what your ideal life is. All of us have the ideal. We know the kind of parents we want to be. We know how we want to react to our children, no matter where they are. We know what we want to say to them. We know what kind of spouses we want to be. We know what it's like we want to tell, how we want to talk to our wives and our husbands. We know what kind of Jews we want to be. We see them and we get so inspired by them. I'm telling you, what I was going through David's stuff, I was going out of my mind. How a person could combine such midos, such excitement for life. I was sitting there, I was crying, going, this is the guy I want to be. This is the guy that I want to be. The balance of midos and dedication for Torah. I was reading of our Torah that was sent around this weekend about his brother who said that he was playing a video game and he turned around and he saw his brother sitting and learning on the couch. I was reading story after story. I couldn't believe some of these things. And I was sitting there going, you know, this is who I want to be. I want to be a guy that gives other people chizik. I want to be a guy that can balance, that can be dedicated to Torah, that can be dedicated to life. And we all have that. But the reason why we're not that is because the minute it comes to our mind, we go, I can't do that. I can't be that. No. You don't understand. We've been married for 40 years. I'm not going to say something different to my wife. Let the kids apologize to me. You think I'm going to call her? She can't call me. She doesn't know my number. Do me a favor. If she wants to make up, let her pick up the phone and call me. The phones still work. I can't do that. I don't do that. I don't learn like that. I don't talk like that. I don't dress like that. That's not me. I'm not that person. I'm not the person that I dream of being. I'm not that ideal. And as a result, we go year after year after year, and we're the same people pretty much. And we get further, and we go up and down, and Yom Kippur comes, and we get better, and then Yom Kippur's over, thank God, and we go right back. And then Yom Tov comes again, we feel guilty, we go forward and go back, and the dance continues and continues. And basically, year after year after year, we're pretty much around the same amount. Israel, you know, Israel for the year pops you out, then you come back, you know, get married, then the wife straightens you out a little bit, and you start tugging at her. And God says, it's okay, but you have to understand how growth really works. The way we become free, the way we become great is we sit at the Seder. And God says, a long time ago, they said, oh, are you kidding me? You're going to be free? We're not even out of Egypt yet. And God goes, no, you don't get it. You don't start becoming free when you do stuff. You start becoming free when you can see stuff. That's what it means to sit at a Seder. It means the Jews sat down and said, we can't live in it. And God goes, at least you can see it. As the Panovitcher Rav said famously, he turned to someone and said, one day there's going to be a big yeshiva here on this hilltop. And they said, Rabbi, you're dreaming. And he said, I'm dreaming, but I'm not sleeping. There's a big difference. And as we go into Pesach, all of us, we're all wonderful. God bless everybody. God bless America. But we all know deep down we want to be more. We know it. We know we want to be a little bit more. We know our family deserves more. We know our community deserves more. We know our people that knows, we know deep down that if someone believed in us the way they did in that school, we would rise to a level that we know we can rise to. Because we know we can learn better, and we know we can be kinder, and we shouldn't have said that thing. But how do we get there? And God says, you know how you get there? You first get out of those trees for one night. One night a year, you stop worrying about doing. Don't do. They didn't leave yet. Just one night, just see. Sit there and see what it's like to be free. Sit there and see what it's like to live your ideal. Be the person that loves God the way you know you could be. Be the father, the mother, the brother that you know you want to be, and feel it. And if you can see that, Daniel Goleman and Lahavdil the Pia Zetzner, if you can see that, God says, now you know how to get out. And so we open up Pesach with the first thing that we do as a nation is God says, you stop doing for one moment. I want you to see who you can be. And that is the first concept of Pesach. The ability to visualize. The ability to see. The ability to not get stuck into this is who I am, because this is who I am, because this is who I am. To get focused on this is who I can be. And when we live this way, when we sit there just for one moment, for one night, and we have this vision, we touch, as Daniel Goleman says, the ideal self. And as soon as we do that, there's an excitement for making that a reality. But it goes further into what I think is the strangest custom that we have, which is matzah. Does this make any sense to anyone here? The whole matzah concept, right? What do we know about matzah, right? God says, time to leave. And for the first time in our history, our mothers were not thinking about how can I feed my children. They were thinking about how can I get out of Egypt. And God says, well, you didn't have enough time to bake the bread, so zap, I'm going to punish you forever. You will remember forever that you should have been baking bread when we were leaving Egypt, but you didn't. So now everyone's got to eat crackers for the rest of eternity. This makes sense. It was a technical difficulty they were running at. And by the way, do me a favor. You really think that Jewish mothers weren't sitting the night before cooking? You ever gone to Great Adventure on Pesach? You know how you pick out the Jews? Simple. The bags of food. We can't go 2 minutes. What if they get hungry? We're going to New Jersey. If they get hungry, they'll eat later. But if they get hungry, they'll eat later. My wife, we go around the corner. My wife's like, what if the kids get hungry around the block? I'm like, we live in the five towns. There's like 700 stores. They'll stop. But what if they get hungry in the car? This is my whole life. Did you eat enough? Yes, I ate enough. Did you eat enough? I don't think you ate enough. Am I wrong? Is there a Jewish man in the world that didn't hear this his entire life growing up? Do you think, honestly, God said, by the way, you're leaving tomorrow morning, and the Jewish mothers are like, you know what? Let's wing it. Maybe there'll be a bodega in the desert, and we'll just pick up some food and cook it on the way. Maybe Shimon's will deliver. I don't think so. Really? The ladies weren't cooking the night before they left Egypt forever? They were cooking for sure. Are we really punished for the rest of time because our mothers were running out of the house and apparently there wasn't enough time to cook some type of bread because of a technical difficulty, a glitch in the system? And so for eternity, why is God taking out on Muhammad so much? I get it. We did this weird thing. You know, it's fine. I had this story. I remember when I went to my honeymoon, my parents sent me on a cruise. I'll never forget this. I did a whole video on this. Sent me on a cruise. It was wonderful. I went to my grandparents. They left 120. We stayed for Shabbos. We were leaving to go to the dock. My grandmother goes, as I get out, I go, bye, thank you, Bobby. My grandmother goes, stop. I go, what happened? She goes, wait a second. I didn't give you anything to eat. I said, Bobby, you see the boat? There's going to be like 1,700. My father took care of this. 1,700 packages of food for me. Don't worry. She goes, what if you get hungry from the car till you get up to the boat? I'm like, that's a good question. I didn't think of that. She goes, I don't have any food in the car. She's rummaging through her bag. She pulls out, you ever had these Presidor cookies? You know what I'm talking about, the swirly ones? She goes, take this, just in case for the way. I'm going to fight with my grandmother. So I get up on the boat. I wait online to the maitre d'. And they say to me, I said, Harari. They go, Harari, yeah, we ordered a lot of food for you coming in from this so-and-so restaurant. We have packaged food for you. It's going to be great. I said, great. They go, where is it? They go, he's running a little bit late. He's probably here in about 15 minutes. I said, perfect. I go to the dock with my wife, and all of a sudden we hear, and the boat, I'm like, why is the boat moving for? And the boat starts to dock off land. I'm like, and as the boat docks off, everyone's like, Barney! My little guy, like this Mexican guy, like in the moped, comes turning around with like a box of stuff. I'm like, oh my God. And he's coming closer and the boat is literally pulling offshore. And I'm like trying to reach over this boat. I'm like, no. I was like, yeah. I'm like, we pull in. I turn my wife. I'm like, we've got two days to Cozumel, Mexico. I'm like, oh my God, we have no food. We went back. This is a great exercise when you first get married. Great honeymoon exercise. You've got 2 days to Mexico and a box of Presidor cookies. Wow, does that build character? And we went home and we cut like little pieces and we rationed. This is at 2 o'clock. This is at 6 o'clock. I slept with my eyes wide open. I held on to my pieces at night. To this day, when that box of Presidor comes to my house, it goes right out of my house. It comes for Shalach Mas. I'm like, get out of the house. My kids are like, why? I'm like, get it out of the house. So every once in a while, my kids eat Presidor and they go, this is the time that mommy and daddy went on a cruise. Okay, things happen in your life. And when you eat the thing, it reminds you of something wonderful. We should sit around the table with nice bagels, we're Jews, with nice bagels and bread and challah, and then in the middle, someone brings out the matzah, and they go, matzah zoo, matzah al shum, and they go through the whole thing, and you see kids, back then, they couldn't have bread, and now we're eating the matzah, crack, crack, thank God you don't have to eat this for 8 days, right? That's what should happen. But we're on this campaign against chametz. Why? But it goes even further. Do we really believe that the Jews ran out of Egypt? Really? Like, I grew up, and I went to a great school, but I learned, like many people, the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim through how? Not through school. Through the Ten Commandments. Remember the Ten Commandments? I thought that Charlton Heston was Moses. I had no idea that God didn't sound like this. Moses. I thought that was God. When I spoke to him, my daven, I was expecting that back. Charlie. It didn't work out for me. I don't know why. How do we know the story? All of us. We went to yeshiva our whole lives. How do we know the story? Moshe goes, Hashem goes to Moshe and goes, I want to take the Jews out, but we got to get Paro's permission. So Moshe goes to Paro and goes, do you mind if we get the Jews out? And Paro's like, no, I will not let them go. Right? As if God, who created the universe, needs power, who he created and sustains permission, right? And like as if he goes back to God and goes, and God's like, what did he say? And he's like, sorry, he said no. God's like, oh, really? Did you say what I told you to say? He's like, I read it from a script. He's not interested. He's like, oh, okay, fine, bring in the blood. And then he goes back and goes, what did he say now? He's like, I'm sorry, he's not interested. He's like, oh, God's like, he's so stubborn. Find the frogs, that's how we think. And then finally, by Makkos Bechoros, Paro's like, okay, fine, I'll let you go. And everyone's like, yes, 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 quick look at God. It's like, come on, come on, come on, forget the bread. Let's go, let's go, let's go. As if we've got God, the guy who creates the world. If God wanted to take us out of Egypt, he could have walked in and said, hey, Moshe, listen, 2 o'clock on Tuesday, lights are going out. Just pack up and book. We could have been eating falafel on Ben Yehuda Street before the lights go back on in Egypt. And they're like, where'd the Jews go? We have to play a game with the guy that God created? Are you serious? But it goes even further. There's a trigger in Torah. The way Torah, when you look in Torah, what you find when you learn biblical exegesis, when you learn into the Ian of Torah, you find that the Mefarshim learn things from trigger words. Whenever you see a phrase that's used in one part of Torah and another part of Torah, the exact same phrase, all the Mefarshim jump on it and they try to draw parallels for things because God's the ultimate author and he doesn't just use his phrases stam. There's a phrase that we use anytime God wants to show the world, I'm in charge. Whenever we're worried about something, God goes, do me a favor, it's going to go on my time. He uses a word, it's called Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. When Noah walked into the Teva, we were worried because Noah said, they're going to kill me. All the people said, we're not going to let you into the table. What did Kadosh Baruch Hu said? Be'etzem hayom hazeh, ba'noach, v'shem v'cham v'yafetz, b'ne'noach, v'eishas noach, v'shosha ba'navi tomal ha'teva. God's like, don't worry, I run the world. Etzem hayom hazeh, middle of the day. No one's running away. Noach, I got your back. This is the equivalent of high-stepping into the end zone. For God, if I can say that. When Moshe died, and they said, well, we're not letting Moshe go. Moshe's a leader. God says, really? I'm in charge. He's going to die and walk into the mountain. When? Be'etzem hayom hazeh. When did the Jews leave Mitzrayim? V'hi be'etzem hayom hazeh. Hotzi Hashem es b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim al tzivosam. Guess what? No one ran away. No one ran from scary beery Paro. No one's scared of Paro. God walked us out as winners. We were triumphant. We came out with our hands raised high. We were high stepping out of Mitzrayim. So then who kicked the Jews out of Egypt then? Because it says, Vayafuas habatzek asher tzim Mitzrayim ugos matzos ki lo chametz. Why? Ki gorshu mimitzrayim. Who kicked the Jews out of Mitzrayim? If it wasn't Paro, it was somebody else. Who else could have done it? It was God. Why would God kick the Jews out of Mitzrayim? I had a friend of mine a few years ago, whose father, wonderful guy, healthy man, and he woke up one morning and he wasn't feeling great. And he goes to see the doctor, he goes to work, and he calls his friend, his doctor, and he goes, I'm not feeling great. My shoulder's hurting me. I don't know, I just don't feel great. He goes, come, let me check you out. He goes into he looks at him, gives him an exam, and goes, you're having a heart attack. He goes, what? He goes, you are having a heart attack. He goes, I'm calling an ambulance. Call your wife. We're going to the hospital. Pandemonium. My friend, I'll never forget that day. Friend calls me up, calling his mom, trying to find people. Horrible. We come running into the hospital, in the waiting room. And he's already in there. Everyone misses him. And he goes in. Thank God, a couple of hours later, he comes out. Doctor said, he's fine. He's going to be okay. Baruch Hashem, he goes on to life, a few weeks, months, he's back at work. I was sitting with my friend one time at a simcha, I go, how's your dad doing? He goes, my dad, he's a totally different man. Totally different man. I go, really? How come? He goes, you know, I don't know. But I just know that as soon as he came out of that surgery, he's a different father, he's a different husband, he's a different man. He goes, but I'm going to talk to him about it. So he calls me up a few days later and goes, you know, I spoke to my dad. And I asked him, you know, you're always a great dad, you're always a great guy, but there's something different about you after that episode. This is what he told me. He said, when I was getting wheeled into the room, I was thinking about all the things I wanted to do and never did. All the calls I wanted to make. I didn't want to quit my job and become like, you know, skier or something. I wanted to tell your mother that I was the luckiest man in the world that I married her. I wanted to call my parents and say, you know, you came to this country with nothing. You rubbed two nickels together. You put me through. He was a banker. You put me through school. You work 24/7, your fingers to the bone. I never fully wanted to say thank you for coming in off the shores of Auschwitz and rebuilding a family. I wanted to tell my kids, he said, that you were the greatest kids in the world. I wanted to call my friend from high. I wanted to make up with that. Little things. And here I was being wheeled into an emergency room, into an operating room. I didn't know if I was going to come out or not. He goes, and I told myself as I was being wheeled in that if I would live, I would live my life with three words, three letters. N-O-W. I would not wait to tell my wife how much I loved her. I would not wait to give my kids a kiss. I'm not waiting to take my kids to the Nick, my grandkids to the Nick game. I'm not waiting until I retire to do that cheer. I'm not waiting until next week when tax season is over. I'm not waiting until they get big or small or it's sunny or it's winter. I'm not waiting any longer to live my life. I know what I want from my life. I know the life that I want. I know the person that I could be. I know it. And every single day when it hits me, I say, tomorrow, tomorrow. It's going to get easier tomorrow. Don't worry, I'll do it tomorrow. It'll be better then. I'm busy today. And here I was about to not have another tomorrow. And I said, from now on, I'm going to live my life now. God looks at the Jewish people and says, you serious? You have a big thing to do. You are my people. You have a lot of work to take care of. And as you grow and as you see yourself in Seder night, you're going to look at the person and you're going to go, this is the person that I could be. This is what it means to be free. The Jews sat around and they go, can you imagine if we were free, what we would bring to the world? Can you imagine if I didn't have this problem, what I couldn't do for humanity, what the person that I can be like? And God says, you're going to wake up in the morning, you know what you're going to do? You're going to say, we can go later. We'll go whenever. It'll happen when it happens. And God says, that's not how you work. You are my people. And the only way you leave Egypt is now. You run out of Egypt. You sprint out of Egypt. You overcome time. Because that's how you accomplish. That's how you're able to go 3,000 years getting beaten and battled up and you're still around. That's how you can come up the shores of the Holocaust and rebuild an entire nation. That's how you can come from knowing how to do spitballs and turn around and become the greatest army in the world. How? How is there 100,000 people about to walk into a stadium and finishing shots? They told the people when they came off two generations ago that those things will be done with. No one's religious anymore. How is it even possible? Because God said, you want to be a Jewish nation? You work now. You don't tell your wife you love her tomorrow. You don't tell your kids you love them tomorrow. You don't learn tomorrow. You don't not respond back. And you knew the minute you said it, you shouldn't have said that. Every time someone says that, you always lash out back. And you know they don't mean it. They're just self-conscious in who they are. But you always lash back and you go, oh. I'm going to get over that. You don't get over that tomorrow. You get over it now. And God goes, that's what it means to be a Jew. You come out of Mitzrayim. You go into freedom, living above time. And if you see something amazing, if you have a chance, you got to see this before the Seder. This is Mamash of Rashi. How the Jews left Egypt. Rashi says in Shmos, Yud Beis Lamed Zayin Beis Subnei Yisrael Ram Seh Sukkos L'Kesheish Meos Elef Ragle Gvram Levan Metav. 3 million people leave from a place called Ramses to Sukkosa. Well, how'd they go? Where are these places? So look at what Rashi says. This is Rashi. Mea ve'esrim mil hayu. 120 mil, 100 miles it was, between these two cities. 100 miles. Can you imagine 3 million Jews walking 100 miles? I get four, my parents live a block. I'm like bothered to walk to shul for a block. You know what I'm talking about? 100 miles in the desert, without food, by the way. Lefish behayusham, vayubal lefish shah. They came within a moment. 100 miles. Well, how'd they get to Sukkosa? Where did the Jews live? In Goshen. Let's look at the Rashi. The Esa Eschem. Ze yom shebo yisrael l'Ramses. This is the day that they came to Ramses. Shal yisrael mefuzar mechol eretz Goshen. They were scattered through the entire lands of Goshen. L'sha'a kala. In a moment. Kishabo Lisa, when they made a movement to actually work, to do, to go, Nikfasu Kulam the Ramses. And the Jews said, we are going now. We are leaving now. God says, get up and go. And the minute the Jews said yes, God says, now watch what I can do. In a moment, you're traveling from Goshen to Sukkot and from Sukkot to Ramses. You're traveling millions of thousands of miles in moments because you have to leave above time and space. That's what it means to be free. It means realizing what we can be and not waiting for some time in the future to do it. It's living now. And as soon as we do this, God says, I promise you, if you give me one Jew to raise their hand and see a problem and make a difference, just watch what I can do behind you. Give me one day of oil, I'll give you seven. Just walk into the king's chambers, I'll make sure the whole thing works out and you get hung on a gallows. Just give me a drop, he's begging, a drop. Leave your house with your family into the desert. Just start walking. In a minute, you're going to be miles away. And Pesach comes and God says, you know why I hate chametz so much? Because it's the same thing. What's the difference between chametz and matzah? It's not the ingredients. It's one thing. Chametz says, relax. Wait. Chill out. Don't get crazy. Don't flip out. Don't get nuts. Relax. It'll rise. And of course, you got to use common sense and everything, of course. And matzah says, now. You have a baked matzah? Every second in that factory is like a lifetime. Now, don't stop thinking. Move. Pound it. Now. Chametz says, relax. Matzah is right now. God goes, I'm not about what you eat. You think it matters to me if you eat bad food or good food, if you eat challah and Pesach? Every moment. Anyone's on a diet, you know what I'm talking about. Anytime you get on a diet and you got to sit at a table and eat celery sticks as opposed to chocolate, you remember what it means to be on a diet. Every single bite, you're like, oh my God. God goes, every single day, in the moment, in the week where I put into the day energy of freedom, in that week, I want you to plug into the outlet. Don't just let it go by you. Don't just hit the tea room up every single few minutes. I want you to plug in. How do you plug in? I want you to eat that thing. And every time you eat it, you're going to say, what am I eating this for? Oh, I'm eating this because I got to move. I got to go. They didn't stop. Why am I stopping for? And Chaim Freelance says something amazing. Sifsei Chaim says, and revealing to us that the secret of this mitzvah of matzah is hidden in a lesson which we need to learn from the haste into going out of Egypt. That is, to say the lesson of the trait, in Hebrew it's called zrizus. For just as they, the Jews in Egypt, couldn't come to freedom except through the power of zrizus, so too it is impossible to come completely to fulfill the Torah and mitzvahs except through the power of zrizus. And I got to tell you something. There was something that was unique about reading and learning about David. There was something that I was trying to put my finger on with him. And after a while, and going through the shir, I believe that the reason why he managed to make such an impact on people, the reason why you have friends sitting here 3 years later, I walked in and everyone's tearing up. Their books and CDs and Sifrei Torah. This isn't normal. It's because he lived this way. He walked into a tish, I was reading from Mor HaShah, and he was the guy that was going crazy. He sat and he learned. I was reading one thing in Shalavim. He went to Shalavim, and he was sitting there, and he was in a 20-minute halacha thing, and he was pounding every single second. He didn't even want to stop for 1 second. And he waited until the 20 minutes were up. He comes back, he's learning on the couch. Be a gadol tomorrow, David, relax. He goes, now. I'm excited now. I give chizik now. And these boys are writing. I want to write one thing. They called him Roddy. Roddy was a walking chizik. The memorable times I've shared with him throughout life, it may be Little League, Teen Minion, bus rides, hockey team, or schmoozing to him about the Giants, are times that I cherish and I'll forget. I can say my Shabbosim won't be same without seeing his bright smile on the block in Teen Minion. Everything he did, every line, every testimony that I read was a guy who lived now. And as a result, all his friends were inspired by him. You come close to this and you're like, I have to be better. And that's our tafkid. We don't have that right. We don't have the right to wait to tomorrow. We don't. It is our job, God says. It is our pathway to true chayrus. When we can say, limitations notwithstanding, we're stronger than that. We're overcoming. But there's one more piece. With this, I'll conclude. It's a famous pasuk from Yirmiyahu. It says, "V'zacharti l'chesed ne'orayich." God says, "There's going to be one. There's one thing that I'll never forget. What is it? It's a song. Lech teich Acharai ba midbar ve'eretz lo zarua. God says, I love you, you're great, you've been great to me your whole life, but remember, I'm going to remember the first nirayah from the beginning of our relationship, the first chesed you did for me, you followed me into the desert. Question. Really? That's a chesed? Can you imagine if a guy was stuck in jail and someone comes to break him out and walks him through a forest till he gets into the hiding spot and then calls him and goes, oh, by the way, I just want to say thank you. I'm just so grateful that you followed me into the forest. I mean, it was so nice of you. I mean, there were twigs on the floor. It was moist. I think you got some mud on your shoes. I mean, just, I wish I could have put the compound next to the jail, but you walked with me to a forest. That's just, I will always remember that chesed. Are you kidding me? God took us out of Egypt to the promised land. He's thanking us for allowing him to take us out. How is that the chesed? How is that the chesed that he's going to remember from time immemorial? So to understand this, we have to understand what really happened in Mitzrayim. Charlton Heston and Cecile DeMille notwithstanding. We think that the Jews, when they were in those last minutes of Mitzrayim, were screaming to get out. They weren't. When the plague started a year beforehand, they stopped being slaves. They were stuck in a place of Egypt, in slavery, so to speak, but they were not physical slaves. And every single plague, the Jews made more money. The Jews, for God's sake, they made more money and more money and more money. And you know the famous medrash that Yosef had three treasures, then he hid one treasure, and during Choshech they found the treasure. By the time we got to the end of Makos Bechoros, by the time this came around, the Jews weren't sitting around and, you know, no, and sitting around with the balls on their chains. Forget it. They were rich. Can you imagine what it must have been like to be a Jew back then? Can you imagine if today there's something like this happened, God forbid? We're walking around and there's blood in the streets and someone goes, wait, you didn't have blood in your house? I mean, really? You didn't have blood in your house? Like, you're a Jew? Like, can I talk? You're a Jew? Imagine what it must have been like to be in Egypt that last year. I mean, you didn't lose any of your animals? For real? What must it be like to be a Jew? They walked out, the Pasuk says, Chamushim Alu. By the time they left Egypt, they were flying. Life was great. And then Moshe comes in and goes, oh yeah, by the way, we're out of here. They're like, where are we going? They're like, to the desert. They're like, I don't think so. My wife does not do deserts. Unless there's a hotel there. I don't think so. The heels don't go with the thank you very much. I just put an extension on my hut. I got two camels now as my car. I put leather on the back. I don't think so. We just moved out into, like, you know, the nice area. The kids go to better schools. There's a little league now for the kids. Forget it. We are... You want to shuttle me to the promised land? I'll take the flight. It's great. As long as it's kosher food and I can watch a movie. I'll fly right into Israel. But I am not walking into the desert. Wait, how are you going to feel? No. Thank you. It's been a pleasure, but we'll be okay just fine here. And we know. How many people left? What were the percentage of Jews left Egypt? The most conservative of estimate was 20%. 80% of the Jewish people said, thank you, it's been great. We'll come maybe, you know, winter break, but I don't think so. We are not leaving Egypt. How come? We don't mind the promised land, but we don't do the desert in between. Because that's how we all are. Because all of us are in a place that's comfortable. It's not perfect, it's comfortable. My relationships aren't perfect, it's comfortable. With my kids, it's not perfect, it's comfortable. I'm an okay dad, okay mom. I'm a good parent. It's good. My relationship with God, it's good. I'm hoping that the no tachman thing lasts forever. But, you know, we can't all be winners. But other than that, I actually know what I'm saying in tefillah, maybe not. It's good. It's good. How's life? Good. You see people on the street, how's life? Okay. Good. I'd complain, but no one will listen. Usually guys say that. And they'll, somehow they throw their wife in there somehow. You stop someone in the street, no one says, amazing. You stop someone in the street and go, how's life out of this world? No. Because to get from good, which is comfortable, to the promised land, requires walking through the desert. And most of us would rather be comfortably mediocre than uncomfortably great. Because it's hard to pick up the phone and make a call. It's hard to not do the thing you've done for 40 years. It's hard to say, you know what, I want to actually change. It's hard to break your teeth over something that you should know already. It's hard to sit down and have the conversation. It's hard. It's hard to be great. It is hard to be free. It is. And because we're Americans, we're like, can you give me the pill? Can I get it in 24 hours? Can I drink grapefruit juice for 3 days and sit on my head and lose 20 pounds? Really? I saw this program on TV that I can buy all the real estate in the world in 20 hours. He promised me I'd be rich. I have to work for it? I don't think so. I'd rather go on Facebook and tweet. hard to go from comfortable Egypt to the promised land. And God says, that's what I need for my Jews. There's no way, God says, I'm going to put you in a crib my whole life. If you want to get it to the promised land, you're going to walk through a desert. The concept of kol haschalas kasha means you didn't start unless it's hard. And God says, I just want to say thank you to all those Jews that when I said it's time to go, you said, I am with you. From thick and thin, I am with you. Because it doesn't matter if you died in the desert, because they didn't make it in the desert. Because if you know the story, they didn't get into the promised land. God goes, I don't care about the outcome. I want the kid that dives on the floor. I want the kid that's going to sit with the math problem until he breaks his head over it. I want the guy that's going to break his head. I want the guy, the father or the mother, that's going to say something to their kids and it's going to hurt just getting it out. I want the effort, God says. I am God. I know what you can do. I just want people that are going to work, that are going to see the vision in Seder night, that's going to go out during the day and the now, and as soon as the desert comes, they're going to say, you know what? I'm plowing through anyways. I know I'm older than everyone else. I don't care. I know I'm too young. I don't care. I'm going to make a difference for people. And God goes, that's what I want for my Jews. And that's the chesed that I'm asking you for. I'm not asking you for anything other than that. I'm asking you to walk into the desert, the Eretz Lo Zarua. Go to a place that you don't know that you've been before and live there. Make it uncomfortable. Because that's all I ask of you, to be great. So God goes, I'll handle the rest. And that, I believe, is what Pesach is all about. It's not what happened a long time ago. It's a roadmap to how to be free. It starts by seeing who we really can be. No fooling. It continues by saying, I'm not going to wait to live anymore. I don't have that right to wait to live. And as soon as we hit that place where it gets uncomfortable, we've all been there, that fire, as soon as we hit the place of uncomfort, we say, this is the desert. I plow through deserts. I'm not going to get lost in Egypt any longer. And this is in every aspect of our lives. And I think when I was going through the stuff that I was hearing and learning and reading and being overwhelmed by David, I believe that that's how he lived his life. He didn't wait. He went to Israel, he blew the place away. Went to Moreshah, blew the place away. Everywhere, there's a reason why this place is packed when we just had a monsoon outside for the first time in a week. It's because he lived this way. And when you're around someone that lives this way, there's something about it that you just can't get enough of. There's something about it that inspires you. It doesn't matter what he says. It's who he is. And that's who we all need to be. That's the concept of a memorial shiur. Not just to say Torah. It's that we believe as Jews that he didn't go anywhere. Our souls don't go anywhere. They're eternal. Our bodies have other issues. But our souls are here forever. And we sit in a room, the whole goal that we're in this world for is just to bring kavod to Hashem. It's just to bring the world to a place where they can be. We are the people, before Amalek stopped with us, we were the people that said our job is to light up the world. We are the Or LaGoyim. We get lost sometimes in the nitty-gritties of politics and you look black, you look white, you look green, and apparently that takes up our time because we get stuck in trees. But that's not why we're here. We're here because for some reason God chose us to become his nation, to bring the world to a place where we see an Or LaGoyim. That's why we are here. Everything else is a detail. When someone passes on, they don't go anywhere. We just can't communicate as easily. But their memory, their spirituality lives on. Memorial shiur is not that we hear some Torah and go back home. Memorial shiur is that we take a lesson from the Nifter. And we say, I'm going to do that now for myself. I'm going to walk out of my own Egypt. This Seder is not going to be, it's going great, Manishtana. Okay, how many pages left? 50 pages left? Okay, I know you just came back from Israel, one Dvar Torah, and that's it. Well, you know what? Let's get to Shulchan Aruch. You can say, and then especially if it's a girl. I know there's 7 pamphlets, which you just got out of your, that's wonderful, honey, it's great. Tomorrow afternoon, we'll have a mock Seder, it's all yours. I am hungry, right? It was awesome the first 3 minutes, and then like, come on, really? I haven't eaten in like 4 hours. I'm a Jew, for God's sakes. God's not torturing me on purpose. So go to a Seder and say, you know what? What's the energy of the Seder? Maybe I have to ask myself, I've been doing this, I'm a tough guy, I don't take mussar, I'm a hush of a guy. Maybe I can be a different person. Maybe I can appreciate my kids. Maybe I can appreciate my parents. Look what my parents gave me. Look at the life they put in front of me. Did I ever tell my parents, thank you for you? or my kids, or my family, or friends, whatever it is. But we sit at a Seder, and we tap into it. Then we wake up in the morning, and we say, this is who I can be, and we don't wait. And then as things get tough, we plow through. If we do that, we are showing Hashem that David lives on. He didn't go anywhere. He's still inspiring us. Look at what I've become because you gave him to us as a role model. Look at what this man did in 20 years. And look how he still continues to bring Kavod Shamayim. That's, I believe, what a Memorial Shir is. It's to connect to him who's still here in the place where he really is, which is in spirituality. There's my bracha to all of us that we leave our Mitzrayim, that we become the people that we know we can be, that we become the fathers and mothers and brothers that we know we're destined to be, and ultimately, we become the nation that we know we can be. We stop at the Narishkeit that stops us, and we bind together as one people under God, and we become the Or LaGoyim that our nation started with when they walked out of Egypt the first time. We will continue it and pass the baton this year. We should be zochet to see simchas together for your family. For Kol Yisrael, Mitzvah Shem Amen.
Thank you everybody for coming. Thank you Charlie for that wonderful tribute to David. There are refreshments in the back and Marv downstairs now.